The Anton Savage Show with Kearys.ie on News Talk.
Mary O'Kane is with us to give parenting advice. And if there are any questions that you have for Mary, 53106 or 087-1400-106. And normally we introduce her exclusively as Mary O'Kane, our resident parenting advisor. In this instance, we get to introduce her as number one best-selling author. And what's interesting is, if I have this right, you have set something of a record in the fact that you're a number one best-selling author. Have I that right?
I have. You have, Anton. I'll tell you what it is. Normally, an independent self-published author is not eligible for Nielsen. So for the best-selling list. So when I wrote my first book, Perfectly Imperfect Parenting, at the time, I wanted it self-published because you kind of have control. You know, it's your baby, and it really was my baby. You get to pick your own cover and stuff like that's important to me, you know. And at the time I was told, okay, but if you do this, you realize you can never go on the bestseller. So you're giving that up if you want to do it. And I said, nope, that's fine. I don't mind. And so my dad died when I was little. I was only 9. And I think when you have a parent die really young, you realize your time with your children is not forever. And my book was my legacy. It was my letter to my children. Like, I thought, if anything happens to me, they always have my book. So nothing else is important. So I did the book and it was really successful and that was great. So this time I said, well, no, when I finished it, it is like childbirth and everything. Never again. And then like childbirth, you know, after a while, you kind of think, maybe we'll try again. So it was like that. I thought, you know what, I'm going to write.
Do you get the same postpartum endorphin release that convinces you that it wasn't as bad?
You do. I think you actually do. I'm telling you. But so this time, this one was absolutely from the heart. And anxious children in an anxious world. There's a really big statistic, Anton. It's everyone talks about it. Professor Mary Cannon, by the age of 13, 1 in 3 of our children in Ireland will struggle with a mental health issue, anxiety being the top. And I'm living that. So one of mine struggles with anxiety. Now, her story is private to her. I don't talk about her story, but she has allowed me to talk about my experience of that. So this book was, again, bestsellers was the last thing on my mind. I kind of was like, should I write a book? And you, Anton, I remember the day I decided I was going to do it. I read this thing online. I don't know if you've ever seen it. It's just like saying that they put out, and I think it's supposed to be positive, you know, these perky little quotes. And it was, good mothers have messy kitchens, but happy children. And that's all well and good when your child is happy. But when they're not happy, I remember reading it and my child was really struggling and thinking, oh my God.
How is your kitchen?
Oh, my kitchen isn't right. Actually, do you know I do have a clean kitchen? Yeah, I'm failing at everything here. But I remember thinking, but my child is really struggling. So you're telling me I'm a bad mother because my child is struggling. And I was on this mission. Do you know what? I'm going to write the book. No parent should have to feel because your child is struggling with anxiety. It's your fault. Like, you're a bad parent.
Do you think there is, and are you seeing from the parents and kids who come to you seeking advice, is there a greater level of anxiety now than there once was?
Oh, Anton, there absolutely is. That Mary Cannon research was pre-COVID. I would love her to go back and look at that now because I'm sorry. So this is anecdotal, but I'm dealing with teachers. I'm dealing with parents every day of the week and they're all saying to me, oh my gosh, since COVID. So some kids who never had anxiety before COVID, well, suddenly we were telling them, don't hug your granny, wash your hands, don't touch this, oh, this is a pandemic. And they were terrified. And so they never experienced it before and now have it. Then others, you know, when they all were doing the wonderful homeschooling, and it wasn't homeschooling, but you know, when we were all at home, some kids loved that. So some kids who struggled with anxiety, they were coping, just holding it together in school, had that time out, and it was like, oh, I can't go back. I think, I also think developmentally, quite a lot of them are behind a bit. But, you know, it's funny.
Why? Because of lack of social interaction?
Oh, yeah. Those 2 years have affected our children more than I think we ever realised they would. And I remember even saying to parents of babies, you know, don't you worry, because primary attachments, like, you're the secure attachment. They're in this little cocoon with you. They will be fine. I was more worried about the older kids. Now, it really did affect the older kids. But, you know, it affected every age group. Definitely.
I wonder, did it have a disproportionate impact on children in smaller families or singleton children? I wonder, is the fact of, if you had a family of four or five and you're therefore rubbing along with your brothers and sisters, did you have enough of that social learning to carry you through in the absence of friends?
I wouldn't be surprised, actually, if you were a single child, although I think parents were a little bit inventive, even if it meant being out in the garden with the kid next door and being away from each other. Parents had to be inventive. But you know, Anton, the number of teachers I've spoken to, so say a friend of mine is a senior infant teacher, and she would say to me, so she would have been ticking along every year with the senior infant group. And so when they came back after COVID, she thought, okay, yes, I'm expecting this group to be behind. Then another September came. Okay, yeah, this group will be behind. She said they are still not where they should be. And the number of teachers who said that to me, they're just not, it seems to have affected everybody. Do you know what I think? You know, when something scary is happening, our children look to us, you know. So if we're the port in the storm and we're calm, but we weren't calm. You know, we were panicking, and our children saw that. And sure, what did we do during COVID? I mean, we always say in times of emergency, don't let them watch the news. We had the news going all the time. We had the, oh, tell me more what's happening. Like we, because we were panicking.
But do you attribute the greater level of anxiety to a COVID legacy? Or is the kind of things that we see about the social discourse, social media, all of that, is that impactful in a general sense as well?
I think it's both. I think it's both social media. Oh my gosh. You know, for, and we say the older children, I mean, they should be 13 minimum going out. They're not. They're going out at a younger age. Funny, Anton, when I wrote the first book, the jury was out on social media. There was a lot of arguments. One research project would say, no, it's not doing harm. And another would say it would. But now there's research by a man called Jonathan Haidt in America. He's just published a book. Oh my gosh, I can't think of the name of it. But anyway, very recent book. And the most recent research, particularly for girls, is saying social media is damaging to them.
Why particularly for girls?
I think it seems to impact their sense of self a little bit more. Now, believe me, I think it won't be long until we get the same results for boys too. It may be just that they've looked into it for girls more quickly. But I think a lot of people have been saying, now, there's great things with social media. I mean, technology is incredible. It's wonderful. Look at COVID. Where would we have been without technology? But particularly social media has its downsides. But, you know, can I just say something? Sorry, back to the book, if you don't mind. Can I just say something else? And I think these levels are really, really rising. One of the things I really feel strongly about is anxiety is disempowering. So whether your child is 4, whether they're 14, whether they're 24, anxiety takes your power away, but it also takes power away from parents. And I think that was the key with this book. My whole aim with this was to empower parents, because parents, I know I'm hearing from them all the time, and parents are saying to me, I don't know what to do. Like I'm stuck. There's nothing I can do. What am I going to do? And they feel helpless. And I think that's why the book is just taken off, because it's giving them some, you know, the strength for empowerment.
Well, on that topic, we have an interesting one in relation to powerlessness. Now, it seems insignificant, but if you were the parent dealing with it, I can imagine it is deeply significant. My 5-year-old has, since the Easter break from school, decided that they won't wear shoes or socks. It's causing an issue in the morning going to school. I have 2 other children and we are under pressure in the mornings to get out the door. Any advice?
Oh, that's an interesting one.
Not wearing shoes or socks.
You know what I always say, Anton? Think of the iceberg. So the behaviour you see is the tip of the iceberg. Why? There's a reason. Does he really have a sensory issue? Maybe that he doesn't want to wear shoes and socks. Or is this a protest? Is there something underneath?
You see, now, Mary, to be honest with you on this one, this is one of those where I'm with the kid. If it was me and it was summery like today is, I would also not wear shoes and socks. The only reason I wear shoes and socks is they won't let me in the supermarket if I don't. The kid is right.
The listeners should see what you're wearing now. Listeners, I hate to tell you, when he's half naked, here he is. No, I get it. I can see how the child just thinks, no, I'm not doing this.
I'm comfy without
getting away
him.
With it. And that's attention. Negative attention is attention too. Like sometimes if you're 5, you don't have a lot of power in the world. You don't have a lot of autonomy. Whoa, he's just discovered I can make the whole house stop for me. And what can they do? The one thing I'd say is you don't want to make it a battle. You know what they always say about battleground? You don't want your house to be a war zone. So the old fashioned idea of grab the leg, force the sock on and put him screaming in the car, is less helpful.
Trying to get a sock onto another human being in any context is difficult. If they're resisting it, it's nigh on impossible.
And they're wriggly at five, aren't they? They're wriggly. No, I think try and get to the underneath of it. Talk to him. Try and sit him down when not under pressure, when he's not going to school, and talk to him about how he's feeling about school. Do you know what a good one can be? Ask him if he had a magic wand. So if you had a magic wand tomorrow, is there anything you would change about school? Or is there anything, and if everything's fine, is there anything you'd change about home? Is there anything you'd change about mornings? And and just see what he comes up with.
What about bribery?
always helpful.
Just a thought. A much more serious one and a significant one for the couple involved. Text to say, my partner and I are separating. We have been talking about this for some time. It is definitely a final decision. How do we break this to my girls? They are 7 and 9 years old. They are going to be devastated that their dad will be leaving. I want to make sure that we can do everything to break this as gently as we can. And I imagine that is becoming a more common issue for families everywhere because the divorce and separation rates are going up, which means that's a conversation a lot of people are having with the kids.
A lot of households. It's good that they know it's definite. I don't mean for them, but what I mean is it's good for the children that if something is a possibility and you maybe say it and then you take it back, it's totally confusing children. So the fact that they know it's definite, they need to approach that with this in mind. You know, we have to let them know that this is actually a definite thing. I think breakup of a relationship for a couple, no matter even who's done the breaking up, it's a process of grieving. But for children, it's like going through the grief of a bereavement. This is their world. This is their security blanket. Everything they believed in terms of safety in the world, I'm sorry, I'm not trying to make her feel worse, but it's their whole world is changing. So it's really important to be so gentle, no matter whether you're united or not. And I always say this, no matter what's happening between you and your partner, if you split up, these little people have to be number one. And both of you, it's really difficult if one person will not do that. So tell them together, but pre-plan what you're going to say, because you don't want one to go off on it and the other one thinking, how dare you say that? Like the face will say everything. Sit together and really think, how are we going to explain this in really gentle terms? They need to know that mummy and daddy no longer want to be together as a couple, but we are still a family and we still love you. They also need to know nothing they have done has caused this. Sometimes a child, maybe they did something that they were told was bold the week before, and then they start thinking, oh, it's because of me. It's because of me. So they really need to know this is nothing to do with you. This is us, but we are still a family and you are a family, no matter whether you separate with these little kids, and that you love them.
And presumably then the issue of how you talk about each other and how you react to discussions of the other in the presence of the kids is very important, because if there is resentment there, it's very hard for it not to become evident to the kids.
Oh, it really is. And Anton, I know I'm saying this as if it's easy peasy to do it, but you have to. So even say you're with your mother and your mother is saying, well, I'm not surprised, never liked him anyway. I told you he was trouble from the first day I met him. It's really important that you have a word even with the extended family. That's not fair on these children, no matter what happened. They love both of you. Now, unless obviously there's been violence in the home or there's something else. But even at that, those children very often love that parent. So you have to be very delicate.
Another one, and it's an interesting one. My 7-year-old won't go to sleep without either myself or my husband lying down with her until she nods off. When it's my turn, I will often fall asleep in the bed beside her. Might not sound like a big issue, but it's taking from the little time we get together. We have a nightlight, soft music and go on to make a sleepy atmosphere, but no luck. Her going asleep on her own. She doesn't seem to have a fear of the dark. Is it just that she wants us to stay with her? How do I get her out of this habit?
Oh, and that habit, is it a boy or a girl, whichever
girl.
It is, a girl, that habit, oh my gosh, that's lovely for that child. Like, I don't have to go sleep on my own. I have mum or dad with me. This is great. I remember a friend saying to me once, her daughter said to her, how come you and daddy get to share a bed, but you make me go off and you make me sleep in a room on my own? And my friend said, she had no answer. And I thought, well, I mean, there is no answer to that one. From a child's perspective, that's not fair. You get to snuggle together and I'm put aside. So I do get why this child is living her best life. I do also get why the mother falls asleep. I mean, I've been there, done that. I think most of us have done that as well. And I do see how it's damaging your relationship. You're doing the right thing with the nightlight and whatever. You know what we do to wean them off it? So everything she's doing, make the same routine. So no matter which one is putting the child to bed, and alternate. It does sound like they're both doing it. So you alternate one night, one the next. Make that like a routine. But the bedtime routine is the same. So it's not like, and dad takes us off and does this, and then mum's like, we do that. So make the exact same routine both nights. You know, your bath, your story, your deep breathing, whatever it might be, exact same for both of you. But what you do is you say to the child, okay, I'm not going to leave you. So you get out of the bed and you sit in the bed and you say, I'm not going to leave you. I'm going to stay here until you fall asleep. But it's sleep time now. So we won't be talking. There's no talking, but I will sit here. Now, this is a pain. It takes time. And you sit on the bed until the child falls asleep. So you do that for a few nights. Then you say, now I'm going to sit in a chair in the bedroom. And maybe you're reading your book. You're doing, I'm here. I will not sneak off. I'm not leaving you until you fall asleep. And you sort of gradually progress to the bedroom door, to outside the bedroom door on the landing. You know what I mean? You're weaning them away. But you're maintaining that bond, now, that connection.
Can I put an alternative to you? Could I, on the other hand, suggest you will spend the rest of your life not cuddling your kids?
What do you mean?
You will spend, in about, this child is seven, by about 14 or 15, kid ain't going to want to be cuddled asleep. Yeah. You will spend the rest of your life not cuddling your kids. Why not do it while you have the chance?
Oh. Anton, I could hug you now. Then, am I having a little impact on you now? Instead of usually, come on, then we grant. Yes, actually, that's lovely. But then she's getting no time with the husband.
Landing.
I'm thinking of her having a bit of time with her husband as well in the evening, having a bit of a life, you know. But you're right, we should hug them when they're little. You know,
on that extraordinary note, Mary.
He's beating me for once and all.
Mary, congratulations on the book. It is Anxious Children in an Anxious World. The author, of course, Dr. Mary O'Kane.
The Anton Savage Show with Kiri's.ie on News Talk.